Welcome to the Occult London podcast. This is a podcast dedicated to exploring magic, mysticism, the Kabbalah, as well as other topics. If you're enjoying what you're hearing, please take a moment to leave us a review and rating on iTunes or wherever you tune in. It really helps more folks find us and helps us to continue to get this message out there. Also, don't forget to check out www.occultlondon.co.uk to subscribe. And if you're feeling extra supportive, consider backing us on Patreon, or you can find us on Buy Me a Coffee. Every little bit goes a long way in keeping this show alive. And also a heartfelt thanks for all your kindness and support. Now let's dive into today's episode. In today's episode, we will be discussing the idea of the Shem HaMefaresh in relation to its use and meaning in Western magic and occultism. We will be discussing initially what the Shem is before looking at its historical development, and also finally discussing some practical ways of working with this powerful magical system. So, let's get started. In Judaism and Kabbalah, the concept of Shem, meaning name in Hebrew, takes on a profound significance. It goes beyond a mere label representing the very essence of something. God's name, for instance, is believed to embody immense power, reflecting the divine nature itself. As Gershom Scholem wrote, "The language of God has no grammar, it consists only of names." The concept of the Shem Tov, or good name, further exemplifies the importance of this. In Judaism, a Shem Tov is considered one of the highest spiritual attainments. For example, the founder of Hasidism, Israel ben Eliezer, was known as the Baal Shem Tov, or Master of the Good Name. Or as Gershon Hundert suggests, Manipulator of the Name. And this title was given to other magicians and mystic rabbis who were engaged in practical Kabbalah, and also who had the ability to use their mystical knowledge and theurgical powers to produce protective and magical amulets to protect against evil, as well as other magical powers. The concept becomes even more interesting within Kabbalah, and there are many different titles used for God in Kabbalah, like Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, the Tetragrammaton, Adonai, Yah, Elohim, Ehiah, Asher, Ehiah, and so on. And each really signifies specific aspects or attributes of the divine name. However, from a mystical or magical perspective, the most potent and sacred name of God lies in the holy name known as the Shem HaMefaresh, literally translating to the explicit name, which can be kind of seen as a veiled concept with many different interpretations, but loosely can be considered to be an extension of the Tetragrammaton. One of the earliest mentions of the Shem is by the Sephardic rabbi and philosopher Moses ben Maimon, also known as Maimonides, who was one of the most influential Torah scholars in the Middle Ages, as well as being a preeminent astronomer and physician, serving as the personal physician of Saladin. In his Guide for the Perplexed book, which was a philosophical work harmonizing and differentiating Aristotle's philosophy and Jewish theology, he wrote the following: "It is well known that all the names of God occurring in Scripture are derived from his actions, except one, namely the Tetragrammaton, which consists of the letters Yod, He, Vav, and He. This name is applied exclusively to God and is on that account called Shem HaMefaresh, the Nomen Proprimarium. It is the distinct and exclusive designation of the divine being, whilst his other names are common nouns and are derived from actions. As we can see from this quote, Maimonides is discussing the Tetragrammaton, or the secret name of God. And if you don't know what that is, check out our episodes on the Tetragrammaton on that particular subject. I'm not going to go into detail on that in this episode, but if you go back through the back catalogue, there's a lot of episodes on the Tetragrammaton. But it's important to note that there are multiple different variations of the Shem Ham Mefresh, ranging from a 12-letter form that can be found in the Talmud, where the original letters go through three permutations, each giving us 12 unique names. There is also a 42-letter Shem, which is derived from the first 42 letters of each word of the Anna Bekoach prayer, which goes as follows, and I quote, "Please now with might, with the strength of your right, untie the bound. Accept our song, strengthen us, purify in awe. Awesome in grace, we who see you as one, guard from harm. Cleanse us and bless, mix mercy with justice and always redeem. Holy power in your great goodness, guide your people. Exalted, unique, turn to us, who recall your holiness. Receive our cry, hear our plea, you know what is hidden. Blessed is the name. Glorious your kingdom throughout space and time." And that's the Anna Bekoach prayer. And this beautiful prayer was attributed to the Talmudic mystic Rabbi Nechunia ben Hachana, who is described in the Mishnah in relation to it in the 2nd century, saying, "Rabbi Nechunia was described as meeting the requirements in the Talmud for being given guardianship of the 42-letter name of Hashem. He secretly weaved this name into Anna Bekoach to ensure it was not available to everyone, but would not be lost. The 42-lettered name is entrusted only to him who is pious, humble, middle-aged, free from temper, sober, and not insistent on his rights. And he who knows it is heedful thereof, and observes it in purity, is beloved above and popular below, feared by man, and inherits two worlds, this world and the future world." We're not going to go into massive amounts of detail on the 42-letter Shem. However, from a magical perspective, it can be divided into different permutations, similar to the 72-letter Shem, which we will be discussing later. So seven groups of six letters each, which can then be mapped onto the seven planetary spheres, or the seven Sephiroth from Malkut to Kesed on the Tree of Life, etc. There is also a 22-letter form of the Shem HaMefresh from the 12th century magical grimoire known as the Sefer Yatziel HaMalek, that is slightly unusual in that its origin is unclear. However, it is used in numerous magical talismans and amulets, and this is pronounced as Anachtam Pastam Pasim Dionysim, which doesn't have any connection to Hebrew or Aramaic language. So there is kind of a bit of a mystery around that. The 22-letter name is quite interesting, and it's described by Joshua Trachtenberg as follows, and I quote, "The name of 22, however, is another matter, more interesting and puzzling, and much more important for the magician. Its debut was made in Sefer Yatziel, which, while largely ascribed to Eliezer of Worms, drew extensively upon Geonic mystic sources. It is therefore likely that the name is older than the book, which introduced it to a larger Jewish public. More than this, we cannot say concerning its age. It achieved a wide popularity very rapidly, was employed in many invocations and charms, and as an especially potent name. And in the 17th century, it was introduced into the ritual of the synagogue, in a prayer which was attached to the reading of the priestly Benedictine. The respect with which it was regarded was undoubtedly merited by its bizarre composition, Anachtam, Pastam, Pasim, Dion Sim. and by the fact that the Hebrew alphabet itself, invested with mysterious potencies, likewise contains 22 letters. Sefer Ratzil offers no interpretation of this name. It bears no discernible relation to anything in Hebrew or Aramaic tongues, despite the hazardness of seeking to trace such terms back to foreign origins. Efforts along this line have been made with the usual success and unanimity. By dint of recommendations and distortions, such classical deities as the Greek Anaxos and the Zoroastrian Anahita, Hephaestus, Pistus, Poseidon, Priapus and Dionysus have variously discerned hidden behind. So, yeah, he's essentially saying it's basically a language they're not too sure what it originates from. Obviously, it does sound a bit like Dionysus, some of the word in that. But if anyone has any ideas, or that'd be interesting, I'd be definitely interested in hearing from you. Lastly, however, is the 72-lettered Shem HaMefresh. This is the most common form when we hear the term Shem HaMefresh, and dates back to Talmudic times. And Judaic law claims that the name of 72 was revealed to Moses at the burning bush, and that he used it to part the Red Sea during the Exodus from Egypt. In the Christian and the Masonic tradition, the name is also said to be the one that Jacob, the patriarch, encountered in the rungs of the ladder, which he dreamt about, and which was, and I quote, "set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven, and behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it." Genesis 28:12. With some scholars also suggested that the angels who are ascending and descending Jacob's ladder were equally numbered exactly to 72. Interestingly, also, the number 72 is also important in ancient Egypt myth, where, according to the legend of Osiris and Set, when Set, who is Osiris's brother, imprisons Osiris in the coffin, he nails it in with the help of 72 helpers of Set, after which it is thrown into the Nile. So, again, you've got this number 72 coming up, which is quite interesting. But anyway, going back to the origin of the name, it's derived from the three verses in Exodus 14:19-21. And this is the form of the name that we will be focusing on in this discussion today. As mentioned, this version of the Shem comes from the book of Exodus and consists of three verses which are from which are derived 72 trigrams or versions of the three letter names of Yod, He, Vav, He. It's important to remember that the Tetragrammaton is comprised of three letters plus one, so Yod, He, Vav, He. If we count He once, then it's three plus one, which is a common theme in quite a few different sort of magical teachings, and particularly in certain mystical traditions as well. The number 72 is magically significant also for other reasons, because the ancient Babylonians decided that the heavens were divided into 72 quinences, comprising of 5 days each. And the Babylonians also gave us the 12 zodiac signs and the 10 degree divisions of the signs or the decans. And these were later adopted by the Greeks and the Egyptians, and then later by the Golden Dawn. And William Westcott, who's one of the founders of the Golden Dawn, described the magical symbolism of the number 72 in his 1911 book, Numbers, Their Occult Power and Mystic Virtues, writing the following. "There are the 72 angels bearing the names of God derived from Exodus by the Kabbalists, Dr. Rudd, the Lemageton, Harlotin, MSS, said that there were an important set of 72 pentacles which, placed in pairs, forms a series of 36 talismans. It is also the number of Kesed, the Sephira of Mercy. It is said that Ptolemy, king of Egypt, collected 72 Hebrew rabbis and confined each in a separate room, and ordered each to write out the Mosaic law, and that by the help of God each wrote out the same words, Megillah of the Talmud. That's a quote from Westcott. The references to Kesed is quite interesting, obviously, in that quote as well, because one way of viewing the 72 names of God are as them as being a Kesedic expression of God's mercy, particularly if you consider the actual lines from Exodus that they're linked to, which we'll talk about now. So the verses that the 72 names are made up of go as follows, and these are from Exodus. So the 19th verse. And the angel of the Elohim that went before the camp of Israel removed and went behind them, and the pillar of cloud removed before them and stood behind them. The 20th verse. And it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel, and it was a cloud and darkness to the first, but it gave light by night to these, and the one came not near unto the other all the night. And the 21st verse. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord drove back the sea with a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea dry land, and the waters divided. So as we can see, each of these verses contains 72 letters each, and describes how an angel of the Lord came down in a pillar of fire and cloud and leads the people out of Egypt. And this story is significant from a Kabbalistic point of view, because symbolically we can say that it shows the idea of bringing the people out of bondage, out of slavery, out of darkness, which can be considered Malkut on the Tree of Life, up the path of Tau, through the waters of the Red Sea, Yesod, then up the path of Samek to the redemptive light of Tiferet. And this idea of redemption is described well by the author Zev Ben Shimon Halevi in his excellent book Kabbalah and Exodus as follows. In Kabbalistic terms, the Red Sea is at the edge of the Yetziratic world, or the frontier of the unconscious. Stretched between the hod and netzach of the psychological tree, there the scriptures say the Lord went before them with a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. This symbol of divine guidance was to lead them through the years in the desert. Individuals who reach this stage recognize this presence in their lives, both in moments of illumination and in psychological darkness. The pillar is the Shekinah, or divine presence, which is perceptible to those in spiritual work. So we have this idea of this figure of light, this pillar of light that's guiding them through the darkness. Halevi also writes, having escaped bondage of the body, the consciousness now rises to the ego, where, guided by Moses and Aaron, the Israelites begin the purification of the psyche. And that's a quote from Halevi, Kabbalah and Exodus. And I will put the books in the show notes as well, so if people want to check out some of these books. Another interesting thing about the passage in Exodus is something that Aaron Leach talks about in his excellent essay on the Shem, which I'll also add in the show notes. And that is the context of the verses that are used. The verses in Exodus describe how the two angels are protecting the children of Israel as they travel through the wilderness. And the focus is on the angelic presence. If we read Exodus 23, it describes the angel as follows. Behold, I send an angel before thee to keep thee in the way and to bring thee into the place which I have prepared. Beware of him and obey his voice. Provoke him not, for he will not pardon your transgressions, for my name is in him. But if thou shalt indeed obey his voice, and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy unto thine enemies, and an adversary unto thine adversaries. So in Aaron Leach's excellent essay, he discusses how this similar this description is in terms of the relationship between the Holy Guardian Angel and the magician, again, emphasizing this idea of the divine connection between the individual using the Shem as a means to get wisdom and insight. Aaron Leach writes, "As most modern mages will tell you, the above is a perfect description of the Holy Guardian Angel, who is set over you at birth to guide and protect you, and to lead you into your destiny. You must follow the voice of this angel, for his is the voice of karma, and to ignore it, to refuse learning the lessons the universe has to teach you, is to invite hardship. The significance of the above is the one phrase, 'For my name is in him,' because the Holy Guardian Angel holds the authority of the divine source in your life. As God said of the Archangel Metatron, who is literally the Holy Guardian Angel of the entire universe, 'What he will command at my bidding, ye must observe and do.'" So anyway, if we go back to the words that are formed from joining these three verses, the Shem or name that is derived from these verses is known as the brilliant name of fire, the Hashem, meaning the name, as well as the 72 leaves of the tree of life. And it's considered to be by some scholars to represent the divine name of Zaoanpin, the Microprosopus. The Zaoanpin, it should be remembered, means lesser countenance and is really kind of the revealed aspect of God in Kabbalah, comprising of the Sephirah, Kesed, Geburah, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod and Yesod. So from this sacred name come 216 letters derived from the three verses, which when we combine them synergistically become the divine logos, or the living word that creates the universe, which is also sometimes used as a 216 letter name of God by itself. So sometimes there is actually an image out there which shows the name of God in a spiral, which is just one continuous name. As mentioned before, the exact origins of the Shem and also the method of how to find the names is not 100%. However, it is mentioned in both the Zohar and the Bahir, which are both very early Kabbalistic texts. Aaron Leach also, in his excellent essay, mentions that the first text that refers to it is a Hebrew manuscript, number 830, that is in the Bibliothèque Nationale in France. However, I was not able to find much out about this for this particular episode. So if anyone has any ideas on that, that'd be interested to know. However, another important text that's thought to be one of the earliest references to the Shem is the Sefer HaBahir, or the Book of Bahir, which is from a manuscript from Provence in France between 1150 to 1200. The Bahir is one of the oldest and most important of the Kabbalistic texts from the medieval period, and until the publication of the Zohar was likely the most influential source of Kabbalistic teachings. It's quoted in virtually every major Kabbalistic work and also paraphrased and quoted many times in the Zohar. The name Bahir literally means brilliant or illumination and is derived from the first verse quoted in the text of the Bahir, which goes as follows: "And now they do not see the light, it is brilliant in the skies." This book is also called the Midrash of Rabbi Nehuna ben Hakana. And although it's a small book, it's about 12,000 words in total, it was highly esteemed. And it was first published in Provence in around 1176. One of the most important concepts that's revealed in the Bahir is that of the Ten Sephirot. But it also discusses the opening verses of Genesis and their true meaning, as well as the mystical aspects of the Hebrew alphabet, discussions on Gilgu, which is reincarnation, 32 paths of wisdom, and Simtum, which is the process of retraction in the creation. However, in paragraph 1 to 10, it also describes the mode of how the divine names were formed. And I quote, "There is a name that is derived from the three verses, Exodus 14, 19 to 21, and travelled and came and stretched. The letters of the first verse, and travelled, are arranged in this name in the order that they are in the verse. The letters of the second verse, and came, are arranged in the name in reverse order. The letters of the third passage, and stretched, are arranged in the name in the same order as they occur in the verse, just like the case of the first verse. Each of these verses has 72 letters. Therefore, each of the names that is derived from these three sentences, and travelled and came and stretched, contains three letters. These are the 72 names. They emanate and divide themselves into three sections, 24 to each section. Over each of these sections is a higher officer. Each section has four directions to watch: east, west, north, and south. The four directions then have a total of 24 forms. All of them are sealed with Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, God of Israel, the living God, Shaddai, high and exalted, who dwells in eternity on high, whose name is holy. Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, blessed be the name of the glory of his kingdom for ever and ever." And that's a quote from the Bahir from the 12th century. So what the Bahir is describing in this passage is a format of writing known as, and I'm going to try and pronounce this, Boustrophedon, which is basically a style of writing in which alternate lines of text are reversed with reverse letters, so that text is read in one direction on one line and in the opposite direction on the next. And this style of writing is thought to have originated with a medieval rabbi known as Rashi. The words of the verses are written out using this technique so that you combine these ones, and then essentially the names of the 72 angels or intelligences are formed. These 72 names are then usually divided into four groups of 18, each group relating to one letter of the Tetragrammaton. And as we know from some of our previous episodes, in the Kabbalistic tradition, all of the four worlds, all the dimensions, are created through permutations of the holy name. So the Shem is no different, and the root of it is within the Tetragrammaton. So an example of this in practice would be to create the first triad. You would combine the first letter of the first verse, so 14:19, which is Vav. The last letter of the second verse, 14:20, which will be He, and the first letter of the third verse, 14:21, which is Vav. And this produces the first angel's name, which is Vav-Heh-Vav, or it's pronounced as Vehuya, once the additional suffix is added, which we'll discuss later. And this is an angel whose powers are described as being subtle spirit, endowed with great wisdom, enthusiastic for science and the arts, capable of undertaking and accomplishing the most difficult things. So the Tetragrammaton has four letters and 12 permutations, three for each letter. Thus, from the four letters, we obtain 12 unique names. And then each of the 12 names has six additional permutations, which yields a total of 72 unique names. And these are the 72 triads that emerge from the verses in the book of Exodus. And then they can be put into the four worlds, the four elements. So there's lots of different magical applications. The process of writing them out is described by Chick Cicero in the excellent book Tarot Talismans, which I recommend, as follows. "The names are obtained by writing these three verses in Hebrew with alternating lines written in opposite directions. In other words, the verses are to be written out one above the other. The first verse from right to left, the second verse from left to right, and the third verse from right to left. The result is 72 columns of three letters apiece, each of which is considered a holy name, a trigram or three-lettered name. The 72 names are thought of as expansions of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. They are separated under four groupings of 18 letters. Each group, read from top to bottom, corresponds to one of the four letters of the Tetragrammaton. So this idea of them being an expansion of the four letters of the Tetragrammaton is also a key aspect in the Bahir when it writes, "These are the 72 names. They emanate and divide themselves into three sections, 24 to each section. Each section has four directions to watch, east, west, north, and south. They are therefore distributed six to each direction. All of them are sealed with Yod, He, Vav, He." One interesting thing to point out when we first look at the Shem HaMefresh is an explanation as to why the name derives from the Tetragrammaton with its letters extended. Because if you look at the three verses of Exodus which are used to create the names, then it's really hard to see how this happens. Also, even if you add up the individual letters of the Tetragrammaton spelling them out fully, it only adds up to 42. However, there is a solution that can be found in a diagram that's found in Agrippa, but it's also discussed by Lazar Linnane, and also Aaron Leach talks about this in that article I mentioned, as well as Lon Miley Duquette. But the image features an image of a tetractys, which is a pyramid of letters, with the names of the Tetragrammaton called the scale of number 10. And each letter of the Tetragrammaton is spelled out in a triangle. So it begins with Yod, which is 10, Yod He, which is 15, Yod He Vav, which is 21, Yod He Vav He, 26, and then the totals of which, when you add them all up, go up to 72. So this is described by Linnane Lazar, who is a French occultist from, I think, like the 17th century. I'll be talking about him later in this episode. But he wrote a book called The Science of the Kabbalah, and he describes this as follows. "His holy name contains within it all the mysteries of wisdom. It is by means of its mystical triangle that the Kabbalists have revealed its attributes and mysteries." He also writes, "According to the testimony of the Zohar, this is the ladder which Jacob saw in a dream, formed of 72 rungs, whose summit, placed on the rays of the sun and moon, was lost in the vastness of the dwellings of divinity. It is by means of this ladder that God's influences descend and communicate with all the orders of the heavenly hierarchies and to all the creatures of the universe." So thus the letters of the Tetragrammaton display the creation of all things from the Ein, or no thing, through the four worlds of Yod, Atzeluth, He, Bria, Vav, creative, and then He, formative. So Vav, formative, and then He, final, Isaiah is action, sorry. So through the four letters of the Tetragrammaton, we can see the divine name of God extending gradually from the source down to our physical plane through the 10 letters, the numbers of the Sephiroth, thus creating the number 72 and thus the divine name of the extension, the Shem HaMefurash. As Aaron Leach writes, "This displays the created universe from its highest to its lowest points and allows us to track the flow of divine energy from its source to the physical world and back." So from a magical perspective, therefore, the 72-fold name can be seen to hold immense power. And it was thought to have been the means by which Moses was able to cross the Red Sea, as well as being able to grant holy men the power to cast out demons, heal the sick, prevent disasters, and also kill enemies. As the Sefer Ratziel tells us, "The name is to be used in exorcism and other matters of similar ilk, and it is thus understood that Whoever pronounces this name against a demon, it will vanish. At a conflagration, it will be quenched. Over an invalid, he will be healed. Against any impure thoughts, they will be expelled. At any enemy, he will die. And if it is uttered before a ruler, a favour will be won. The supreme power of the 72 name of God can be illustrated as well if we consider that in Jerusalem, prior to the destruction of the temple by the Romans, traditionally once a year on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol, or the high priest, is meant to have entered the Kodesh HaKodeshim, or Holy of Holies, which was considered to be the most sacred and innermost part of the temple. And on this particular day would have been the only day of the year when the priests would actually enter this sacred place, and it was a site reserved for only for the high priest. And it's also where it's thought the Ark of the Covenant was housed. Inside the Holy of Holies, the high priest would pronounce the 72 sacred names using a sacred and secret pronunciation, a tradition that was orally transmitted from one priest to another. And this practice was integral to the Yom Kippur ritual, apparently, and allowed the priest to seek forgiveness for both his and the other priest's sins, but also seeking strength and guidance for the year ahead. And traditionally, unfortunately, obviously, you know, this secret is meant to have been lost at the demise of the last high priest, and also the pronunciation of how it would have been said as well. That's all we've got time for now. However, we will be continuing this topic in our next episode by examining the development and history of the Shem HaMeferesh and some of the key occultists and magicians who contributed to its development. If you have enjoyed this episode, please remember to rate and review the podcast and share it with a friend, as we are really keen to grow the pod. Also, if you would like to contribute, you can through our Patreon or Buy Me a Coffee links in the show notes. Also, if you do have any questions arising from the episode, please feel free to reach out. There is an email address on the show notes as well. To finish tonight's episode, I wanted to finish with a beautiful poem by Aleister Crowley titled The Rose and the Cross. Out of the seething cauldron of my woes, where sweets and salt and bitterness I flung, where charmed music gathered from my tongue, and where I chained strange archipelagos of fallen stars where fiery passion flows, a curious bitumen, where among the glowing medley moved the tune unsung, of perfect love thence grew the mystic rose, its myriad petals of divided light, its leaves of the most radiant emerald, its heart of fire like rubies at the sight. I lifted up my heart to God and called, how shall I pluck this dream of my desire? And lo, there shaped itself the cross of fire.